Hello everyone, this is Mike Quincy, Connecting the Light. My guest today is Anne Eller, who worked with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, who's looked upon as the father of UFO alien research. Anne has her latest book out called Dragon in the Sky, which is about a prophecy from the stars, amongst other things. She believes there is nothing to fear in the immediate future, but we do have something to prepare for, because her prophecy was about the coming changes, if I read between the lines correctly here. So we'll hear all about that, because Anne is on the line. Welcome to the program, Anne.
Thank you, Mike. It's wonderful to be here with you. Nice to meet you finally. And I want to say hello to Salusa and the rest of the Syrian family.
That's very nice of you. Thank you.
Well, I feel very connected to them.
I'm sure you do, yes, with your experiences.
And to you also, because you're an Atlantean.
I've always been interested in Atlantis, yes. So I think, like most people, I probably had a life or two during the Atlantean period. Yes, I felt very much attracted to it.
Yes.
So, right, now, I don't want to dive straight into your book, although no doubt some of the questions I'm going to ask you are covered in it, but tell us about the dreams that you used to get, and you may still have them, of course, that led to your interest in UFOs and ETs.
Sure. They started in 1976 and were steady for about 4 years, night after night after night. And I would dream about all different kinds of extraterrestrials, alien beings, about different types and kinds of craft. In fact, I was even able to pilot one of the craft in one of the dreams, which was really very exhilarating. I was shown hidden bases around the planet and under the sea. I had my skull opened by a couple of ET doctors who, for the purpose of changing my tapes. But when they got in there, they found that my tapes were permanent and couldn't be changed. I obviously had a pre-programmed life that I was to lead, and they were very surprised at this. I dreamed about a lot of pregnancies and a lot of babies, and I think this had to do with the hybrid breeding program that the Zetas were doing. I dreamed about alternate realities. I was shown another Earth in a dimension right next door to us and told that we are all over there on that Earth also. Yes. I also viewed the Earth from a monitor from the ship and saw it wobbling, and then all of a sudden it fell over on its side and the oceans just sloshed out across space and then came sloshing back again across the Earth. And those of us who were watching on the monitor were just in shock. We couldn't believe that something that drastic could happen. And we didn't think that anybody could survive that. So that was a very traumatic dream.
Yes. Now, would you say, having mentioned that, because that may cause some concern with people, that what you probably see are future possibilities? In other words, it's not necessarily written in stone, and in time, different things that happen can change it.
Yes, that's very true. Given enough time, we can change those things. And if enough mankind had developed a certain level of consciousness by a certain point in time, we would have been able to shift and get out of this Planet X passage that's coming.
Right. Now, I'll pick up on, obviously, what you're saying here about Planet X, which some people probably know better as Nibiru.
Yes.
I've read different stories about what it is, and basically it appears to me that it was an old battle planet that was commandeered for other purposes and brought the Nibiruans through our solar system on a periodic basis, on a cyclic basis, but is now waiting for the disclosure and contact with ETs by the Earth people. Now, is your reading something like that, or if it's different, tell us what you think.
Well, what I have come to learn is that it is a planet that is inhabited by the Anunnaki, and it does come back about every 3,600 years. It has this very long elliptical orbit that brings it through our solar system every 3,600 years, and we happen to be living at that time right now. It is currently in the solar system. It is currently between the sun and the earth, and it will pass by at about 14 million miles. That'll be the closest it will come to us. So it's not going to hit the earth, but it will come close enough that it's going to cause quite a bit of havoc. And people need to know this, and they need to be prepared for it. They don't need to fear it at all, but there is preparation that is important.
Right. Now, any answer that's put forward about the planet Nibiru is obviously subject to one's own feeling or intuition. Now, I did read, and I just put this forward to you, that Nibiru certainly had entered the solar system, but had stationed itself on the other side of the sun. Now, that might have been an earlier position, and what you're giving us now is a more up-to-date position. So, is your information quite recent?
Yes, it is. It's very recent. And I would refer your listeners, if they want to be updated on a weekly basis, to go to zetatalk.com. My point of reference, my ET beings are telling me that zetatalk.com is excellent. That is very up-to-date, very accurate information that we are giving. It's probably not 100%, but it's up there. It's 85 to 90% accurate. Go ahead.
I didn't quite catch the web address there, so could you give it to me slowly and I'll jot it down.
It's Zeta Talk, ZetaTalk, ZetaTalk.com.
Oh, I've got it. Yes, I've heard of.
Yeah.
I've heard of that one. Now you've given me the website address. Okay, fine. Right. So
there are things that we need to do, you know, to
yes.
prepare for it. There are some other names for it. It's called the Destroyer, the Red Star, Wormwood from the Bible, and the Dragon. And the Dragon was the symbol that was given to me in my experience with my ET family. But if we choose to survive what's coming, and we can, there's some spiritual preparations that we need to make. And I think what's important is that we need to seek our own inner spiritual guidance. We need to get quiet. We need to get centered. And we need to make peace with our own God. First and foremost, I think that's what we need to do.
Yes.
And then we have the time to tell our families how much we love them and to ask for forgiveness or give forgiveness if necessary. Many people are going to leave the planet in a relatively short period of time. We will choose to either go into spirit, or we may get lifted into a spacecraft, or we may escape through a portal into another dimension. Or we may survive and stay on the earth and rebuild. And if we choose to do that, our ET families will be helping us in the aftermath of this. And they will be helping us to clean the atmosphere and the soil and the water. And they'll be very close by for all of those that do survive. Some of the other things that we need to do are, you know, stock up on food and water and medical supplies. We need to locate outside of the cities because the cities are just going to be death traps. And we need to, if anyone is living along the coastline or close to large bodies of water, they need to move inland. They need to be at least 100 miles from the oceans and need to go to a higher elevation, if possible. It should be at least about 1,000 feet up from sea level. And basically prepare for a camper's life for a certain length of time. You know, any survival preparation, like, you know, learning how to plant crops and learning how to take care of in medical situations, all of those things are going to be very necessary preparation for all of us.
Right. Now, I believe you're relating this to the prophecy of a pole shift, and I thought a pole shift didn't actually have any physical repercussions. It was the axis tilt that caused the damage. Now, am I correct in that assumption?
Well, it is. The pole shift is going to happen on a scale of 1 to 10. If the pole shift is 10, we're at about a 6 right now. And by the end of the year, they're telling us that we will be at a 7, which means that by the end of this year, there will be a massive shift in the tectonic plates. So, yes, there will be a pole shift, but it's the movement of the tectonic plates. It's all this electromagnetic push and pull between Nibiru and the Earth that's going to cause a lot of the destruction.
Right. Now, I ought to make the point here, when you're talking of people leaving the Earth or whatever their future has for them, that we do choose our life plans. This is not something that's thrust on people that they were unaware of before they incarnated.
That, yes, absolutely. That's correct. We all knew what we were coming in for. There was purpose to being here at this point in time. We may not remember it, but we definitely chose to be here at this time.
Yes.
We're going to have a ringside seat. You know, it's going to be quite exciting, too. There are going to be a lot of fireworks, and we're going to have a ringside seat, and we're also going to have an opportunity to make great spiritual strides. And that's
right.
Why I think a lot of us chose to come at this time.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because without balancing what is going to happen with the benefits and the reasons for it, I could well see that a lot of people would become quite frightened, particularly like when you tell them to prepare for it and what they need to do. But no doubt over the next months, we might get more contact and be advised a little bit more as to what we might need to do in particular areas, because I believe some are more prone to these changes than others.
You know, exactly, and that's a good point that you bring up, because on Zeta Talk, there is an area that talks about safe locations, and everybody can look up their location on that website and see what's being predicted for their particular area. So that'll give everybody a heads up.
Right, that's certainly very useful. Okay, let's just go off at a little tangent here just for a moment to get
okay.
this background picture to what's happened to you before. I guess you were clearly set up to have contact with Dr. Hynek, but how did that come about? How did you get to know him?
Well, after I had these 4 years of dreams, which made me a little crazy, I read everything I could possibly read on the subject and talked to everybody I could talk to. And everywhere I went, everything I read, there was one name that kept coming up over and over, and that was Dr. J. Allen Hynek. He was the man. He was the man that was in charge of the UFO research. So I sent him a letter, and I told him I was having these dreams, and I wanted to know if he could give me any help in explaining them, or if he could put me in touch with somebody in Arizona that I could talk to. Well, I didn't hear anything from him for about 9 months, and then one night the phone rang, and it was Dr. Hynek. And he said he had just come across my letter, just found the letter under his desk on the floor. Well, after I got to know him, that was sort of typical. He was a little bit of an absent-minded professor. And he didn't have a lot of organization in his office. So he told me that he was interested in the dreams, and he asked me to tell him a little bit about them, which I did. He asked if I had kept a log of them, and I had, sort of sporadically. He said he had a colleague that was doing a research project on these dreams because they were worldwide, and he would be interested and would like me to send him a copy of the log. So I did. And then I didn't hear anything from him. 5 years went by, and one day I was working as a nurse nights at the hospital. Came home one morning and opened up the newspaper, the Arizona Republic, and on the second page, there were the headlines. Dr. J. Allen Hynek brings UFO research to Scottsdale, Arizona. I couldn't believe it because it was literally in my backyard. So I had to go over because I just knew I had to be involved. So one morning I went over, and nobody that had anything to do with the center was there, but there were a lot of people milling around just waiting for them to come back. People had come from other states to tell Dr. Hynek what they were experiencing. It was very interesting. And so I milled with them for a little bit and chatted with them, and then finally wrote a note and left it on the desk. And a couple of days later, Brian called and said, sure, come on over. You can help us set up the office. So I did, and in a couple of weeks, it was probably 2 weeks before I even met Dr. Hynek. Evidently, he liked the way I had set up the research office, and so he asked me if I would come and work for him as his assistant full-time. He said he couldn't pay me more than $100 a week, but that they were trying to get funding, and if they did, I would get a regular salary. So I quit my job at the hospital. I thought, I can't pass this up. And so I went to work for him, and some weeks it was 7 days a week, and other weeks it was 5 days a week. It was one of the most exciting periods in my life. It was just fabulous.
Right. So let's recap here. What was Dr. Hynek's function? Did he vet all UFO sightings and ET contacts and things like that?
Yeah. The government and the military had hired him to be the scientific debunker for UFO sightings. He was the UFO research and scientific advisor to Project Blue Book, Project Grudge, and Project Sign. All of those. And he was also the founder of CUFOS in Chicago. That was the Center for UFO Studies. And then IQ4 in Scottsdale, which was the International Center for UFO Research. But he was the guy that was hired to say, well, it was Venus chasing the moon, or it was swamp gas, or it was something other than aliens from outer space. They didn't want the public to believe that there were ETs here and that these craft were being operated by very intelligent, highly spiritual beings. And then we get to the point where we find out that in 1954, President Eisenhower met with the ETs.
Yes.
He actually met with two different groups. The first group was called the Nordics. You know, they were the tall blondes, the very good-looking, very human-looking aliens.
Yes.
And he met them at Muroc Test Center at Edwards Air Force Base in 1954. And they offered to help us with our spiritual development because they knew we were going through this spiritual transformation right now. It was going to start imminently. But they also refused to give us any of their very advanced technology because they said we weren't mature enough to use it for the benefit of mankind. And they demanded of Eisenhower that we dismantle and destroy our nuclear weapons. They stated that we were on a path of self-destruction. Well,
yes.
You know, Eisenhower was a military strategist. and he didn't think that was such a bargain. So he felt we would be a sitting duck and wouldn't have any defense, and so he told them no thank you. And then later that year, he met with a second group of ETs from Zeta Reticuli, the Greys.
Yes,
and he entered into a treaty with them, and they agreed to share some of their technology with us. And, of course, that's what Eisenhower wanted. But
yes.
they said, you have to agree to let us abduct humans for the purpose of our hybrid breeding program. And they were given permission by our government to do that. But our government said, well, you can't harm these people, and you have to return them back to where you picked them up, and you have to wipe their memory clean so they don't know what happened to them. And then on a regular basis, you give us a list of the people that you have contacted. You know, for so many years, we wondered, how did the government and the military know who the people were that were being abducted? And this is why. They were given a sheet of paper with the names on it. These Greys promised to make no other treaty with any other Earth nation. And so Eisenhower thought this was a pretty good deal, and he went ahead and signed the treaty. So that was 1954, and that's given us 60-some years of the alien U.S. military cooperation. And they've been working with the ETs since then, and that's how Area 51 came about in Nevada and Dulce, New Mexico. And in Australia, we must have something like 10 top-secret American facilities. Pine Gap happens to be one of those.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes,
you know, go ahead.
I was only going to say, when you mentioned Pine Gap, there has been a lot of stories coming out about the mysterious goings-on in that area.
Yes, and even in England, there we have a couple of bases underground in England that are doing probably the same kind of very weird experimentation. These are all the black ops, the secret
yes.
operations that they don't want us to know anything about.
Right.
So
well,
we've literally been lied to for a long, long time.
Yes. I must say, when you tell us information like that, which of course some of it has been let out from other websites, I cannot understand anybody that cannot see that there has been one great cover-up of everything they can to do with UFOs and ETs. I mean, notwithstanding the fact that they're photographed, they're on video, you've got first-class witnesses with pilots and people like that, I'm surprised that some people are still in denial.
And, you know, they are. I am shocked, too. But, you know, Mike, you and I are in this business on a daily basis. And sometimes I know that I forget that a lot of other people aren't, and that this comes as a total surprise to a lot of people. But anybody who thinks that the government is telling the truth about anything at this point is going to have a rude awakening. There is so much that has been covered up. They've been following Planet X for 27 years, and you don't hear them telling us anything about that, do you?
No, you don't indeed.
But they've gone ahead and they've made their own, they've created their own bunkers. They have them all stocked. They have their underground facilities ready to go so that at any minute they're going to take off and go inside and lock the doors. And you and I don't have a pass to go in there. There was a politician from Norway that was talking recently that said, you know, and this is happening in countries all over the world. I'm sure it's happening in England, too. But in Norway, they have built this underground facility that will hold 2 million people, and they have chosen the people to go inside. And they're basically certain scientists, certain doctors, and younger people, certain technical people that they feel will be needed, that their skills will be needed later. And the other 2 million people in the country have to fend for themselves on the surface. Now, it's also Norway where they have this seed bank built into the ground.
Oh, yes.
And they've taken seeds and plants from all over the world, and they're keeping them underground. Why do you suppose they're doing that? Because they're expecting great devastation, and they want to have those things that they can start rebuilding with when things calm down. But, you know, it's just amazing how the powers that be have known all of this for so long and have gone ahead. They've used our tax money and gone ahead and built these fabulous structures underground where they can live for a couple of years and not even come to the surface. But one of the other things I want to say is they also have spacecraft that they can leave the planet if they so desire. One of the things that we just learned not too long ago was about the statements that Ben Rich made. He was the CEO of Lockheed Aeronautics and Lockheed Skunk Works, which was their secret arm. And he said on his deathbed, and this was 1995, he said, "We already have the means to travel among the stars." And by we, he meant the U.S. Aerospace community and the military-industrial complex. He said, "Anything that you can imagine, we already know how to do." He said, "We can take E.T. home." They used the recovered UFO at Roswell, and they used what they learned from that to develop and influence the designs of several of U.S. top secret aircraft. And he said there are only two types of UFOs, those that we make and those that they make, meaning the extraterrestrials.
Yes.
It was just, it's incredible, you know. And this was back in 1995 that he came out with all of this. So, you know, we've really been kept in the dark, and people are waking up. You know, that's what's happening. The consciousness is being raised. We are being transformed. We're becoming an expanded spiritual being. The more our consciousness expands, the more spiritual we become. And our solar system and galaxy are on the move, and the closer we get to galactic center, the more conscious we become.
Right.
It's going to be fantastic because we're on this path to the higher dimensions. We're going to go to the fourth and the fifth dimension, and that's really what's exciting about being here now.
Right. Now, if one looks at all the information that's being passed to us by the Galactic Federation, and I don't mean simply Salusar, I'm thinking of people like Sheldon Neidl, one would get a clear impression that to some degree the ETs, that is the benevolent ones, are keeping the Earth in balance. So do you feel that although this devastation has been foreseen, that they may in fact be keeping it in check, and perhaps the outcome won't be quite so serious?
Well, I do think that they've been working overtime to help us over these last 60, 70 years, however long it's been. I do think that they have helped to stabilize some of the tectonic plates throughout the years so that they wouldn't prematurely rupture. But I believe that now the time has come when this has to play out, and they will be here to support us, but they can't interfere. They can't totally interfere. They can if it has to do with nuclear holocaust, because that will also affect the surrounding cosmos. And
yes.
When that, you know, they can interfere with that, and they have been They've been interfering at all of the nuclear sites around the planet. They've been shutting them down, and thank God they have, you know. Otherwise, the planet would have been a cinder a long time ago. They're definitely here to help us, and but they can only do so much. They can only interfere so much. The rest of it's our own karma, you know. The rest of it, we have to go through a certain amount of it, and we have to make our own decisions about certain things. But it's awfully nice to know. It's awfully comforting to know that they are here in great numbers, surrounding the planet and keeping an eye out for all of us. Because I do think that no matter how bad it gets, they will be playing a big part in helping it not be as tragic as it could be. Yes, I don't want to sound like this fear monger, because it's a very exciting time to be here.
Yes, I agree with you. And now, one of the to me, one of the most astonishing experiences you have had is when you met a group of female extraterrestrials. So I'd love to hear a bit about that.
Sure. That was the same year that I was working with Dr. Hynek, 1985, and he sent me to a UFO conference in Laramie, Wyoming, and he thought that I would enjoy meeting Dr. Leo Sprinkle, who was putting on that conference. And so I went and met Leo and had a wonderful time. And while I was there, I heard about Pat McGuire's ranch. And this was a ranch that was just outside of town. And the stories about this ranch were that it seemed to be on a power spot, like it seemed to have ley lines through it. It seemed to be a portal for spacecraft. Anyway, Pat McGuire had wanted to drill for water, and he had brought in companies, all kinds of companies, to try and find water on his property and couldn't. One day, a spacecraft landed on the property, and the aliens got out and showed him exactly where to drill for water. He did, and had water from then on, all the water he needed. So this was the background. And during the conference, many people took side trips out to Pat McGuire's ranch, and they kept coming back with all of these unusual stories. So I stayed an extra day just so I could go out there and see what was going on. And this couple from the conference, Doug and Connie Tipton, offered to take me out. So we went out in their truck, and we started walking the land. As soon as we crossed the border onto the land, there was just a dizzying energy that you could feel. It was very unusual. But we started walking the land, and there was also a herd of, antelope, a herd of antelope on there. And all of a sudden, the herd got spooked and started to stampede. And Connie said to me, that means that a ship has come through the portal from the etheric onto the ranch. And it has startled them. It has frightened them. Well, we couldn't see anything, but we did begin picking things up psychically. Just about that time, I was hit with a beam of light right in the center of my forehead. And my eyes were closed, and it seemed as though the light was pink when it first started. And it became brighter and brighter and brighter. And my body was going through all sorts of cramping, contortions, and pain. And I felt as though somebody was jamming a steel rod down the back of my neck, down my spine, and out my tailbone. I felt like I was being lifted up, and I felt like Doug and Connie were way, way far away. And eventually, I was sent back down to the ground and ended up in a heap on the ground when this finally stopped. But before it stopped, the pink light turned into a brilliant white light inside my head. And all of a sudden, that white light just exploded. It was like a million of these little sparklers that go off, you know, in fireworks, the little sparklers all over. When I opened my eyes, finally, Doug and Connie had run over to see what had happened. I looked up at them, and they were startled because my very, very blue eyes had been bleached pure white. There was just no color in my eyes at all. Well, there were many things that happened from then on. We had some missing time. We ran out of gas. There was a terrific lightning storm. Every time I closed my eyes, I was shown a different symbol. The first symbol was the dragon with the tail flipping in the sky. And then there was a Maltese cross. There was an emerald, or it was a clear gemstone, but it was the emerald cut. So I didn't know whether it was a diamond or whether it was crystal. There was a trident with a five-pointed star in the middle, and then there was an arrow pointing straight up. But anyway, we had missing time. It was like midnight before we got back to the dormitory, and we all seemed to think that we had to stay together, that whatever was occurring hadn't finished, wasn't complete yet. So we got these huge cups of coffee, and we went up to my dorm room, and the three of us were there. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, we were sitting there just talking, and all of a sudden, Connie's face began to change. And I couldn't believe it. I said, "Connie, your face is changing." And she said, "Doug, take my hand. This is going to be a heavy one." Well, I didn't know what she was talking about. But all of a sudden, here, sitting in front of me, from the waist up, was this beautiful female being, alien being. She looked quite human and yet quite alien also. She had big, big eyes. They were probably 3 times the size of our human eyes, but they were not slanted. They were perfectly round. She had an ornament on her head. She had a very regal bearing, and these eyes just projected the most love you can imagine. I was just stunned, and all of a sudden, the tears just started to pour out of my eyes. But she said, "You desired to see us in the physical. We hope this will suffice." And then from her, then another being came in, and another, and another, and another. All of them with the feeling that they were female. They all had some kind of an ornament on their head. And they were all very, very loving beings. And at one point they said, "You may now ask your questions." You can imagine how dumbfounded we were at that point. You know, yeah. The day before we could have thought of a million questions, but at that point we weren't. So I asked them where they were from. You know, that's that stupid question that we all think we need to ask. And immediately, there were 2 words in my mind, and the being that was there at the time said, "Yes, that's correct. It is what you are thinking of right at this moment." And it was like the long form and the short form of a place, like L.A. or Los Angeles. But at that point, it was erased from my mind, and I've never been able to bring it back. But anyway, after quite a few had come through like this and we had asked certain questions, one of them had put up her hand in a certain greeting. And at the same time she did that, Doug and I put our hands up and mimicked exactly what she was doing. It was almost very automatic on our part. But then one of them said, "We will now yield to a higher power." And in came this higher power. I couldn't imagine what a higher power would be like. But she was more like E.T., you know, the movie, E.T. She was more wrinkled. She was more grayish. very, very ancient looking, still those very big round eyes with so much love, so much compassion in them. And it was like, I have likened it to being in the convent, and it was like the other females perhaps were the sisters, the nuns, and she was perhaps the mother superior. I just loved her. She felt like a teacher to me. She felt like a mother to me, and I didn't want her to leave, and I asked her if she would stay, and she said, "We have always been with you." I asked her what had happened to me out on the ranch, and she said, "In your language, you would call it an initiation." She said, "We have given you higher powers, and you will now receive direct communication from us." I asked her, too, "Well, is the mission on track?" Now, mind you, I had no idea what this mission was, but it just seemed to be the question to ask. And she said yes, and it would be completed. This went on from 3 a.m. until 6 a.m. So for 3 hours, the room that was absolutely crowded with these beings. One brushed by me, and I could physically feel it on my arm. And as the sun came up at 6 o'clock, they all departed. But they had first put us through a little demonstration of, it was kind of an exercise on how to teach me how to recognize when to open my channel and so forth, when to feel the tapping on the head and the ringing in the ears and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
It was absolutely miraculous. It changed me as a person. There are such beautiful, loving beings. They were certainly not of this planet, and they were, I got the feeling that they were interdimensional. And that they were not restricted to this solar system, that they could, you know, come and go whenever they pleased. I have just dubbed them the Sisterhood of Light, because that's, I felt like they were a sisterhood, and I felt as though somewhere deep down in my soul and perhaps deep in my past had a connection with them. And that was why they were appearing to me.
Indeed, I was about to say that one would tend to believe that you were, in fact, from that same group of ETs.
Yeah.
That would seem fairly obvious. That's a wonderful story, and I must say, only on one occasion was I taken out of the body, and this rarely happens to me, at least, if it does, I don't recall it. And I was taken out of the body and shown a scene from one of my past lives when I died. And this spiritual being, totally in white, or with a white light, gave out something similar to what you were talking about, which is this great love, which is indescribable unless you've experienced it. But it was just sort of seemed to totally cover me, if that's the word to speak about. And it was the most wonderful feeling.
It certainly is. And, you know, I think that's the longing that we feel. We miss that. We've come from that. And we miss that so much when we feel it again, that I think that's why we long so much to go home or to be with them again.
Yes, indeed, I believe so. Now, there's something important that I must ask you about here, which relates to these prophecies you had. I get the impression you were probably told something about the date, the 21st of December 2012, because if it is correct, as one tends to understand, that that is a key moment in the ascension process, that could be the time when all of these activities you've spoken about, the changes, will have been completed. So how do you think that date fits in with what you know?
Well, I think that date has been a marker somewhere around 2012, somewhere around December 2012. I don't think it's an exact time, an exact date. Probably nothing significant will happen on that day. But it's being used as a marker that this is around this time these things are going to transpire. Now, it could be sooner than 2012, or it could be beyond 2012. Nobody actually knows. That time has not been calculated, and it's difficult to calculate. You would think if you knew a planet was in an orbit and it was traveling toward you, that you could figure out how soon it would get here. But it's in a retrograde motion, and there's all kinds of cosmic things that have to be taken into consideration, I guess, cosmic weather or whatnot. And this repulsion factor that large bodies, large cosmic bodies have between each other so that they don't hit each other. All that has to be taken into consideration. So we can only guess at when things, but we can keep an eye out because there are going to be certain markers that will tell us this is moving along, and at some point it will speed up. I mean, they've been watching Planet X for 27 years, so it's not a real fast traveling planet, but it's getting quite close, and it has this huge tail, and that's coming with it, and in that tail there's all kinds of gravel and boulders and suns or moons and all kinds of things, and this tail wafts way far away from Planet X. It can go as far as 5 million miles away from the planet. Well, that's going to come 5 million miles closer to the Earth, and we're going to be pelted with some of that stuff. There's going to be an increase in fireballs, and we've already seen that. There's going to be an increase of these small meteorites. We're already experiencing that. And at some point, the Earth is in a wobble now, and the wobble is getting more erratic and more severe. But the first thing that's going to happen is the tipping of the Indo-Australia plate, with Indonesia sinking. And that's already started to happen. So we know that the big changes have begun to happen. Then there's going to be a folding of the Pacific, and that allows South America to roll, that plate that South America is on. And then there's going to be some tearing of the South Atlantic Rift, and that allows Africa to roll also. And then the floor of the Mediterranean will begin to drop. The great quakes in Japan, that's going to be a clue for us, because as soon as those great quakes in Japan start, well, I'm talking about the United States now, it's going to be followed by the New Madrid Fault, which is going to actually divide the United States in half. And as soon as that happens, after that happens, then it's going to be followed almost instantly by the tearing of the North American Rift. And then the European tsunami is going to happen. Now, this is all information that we're getting from the Zetas, from Zeta Reticuli, on ZetaTalk.com. So they're being very specific about what to watch for. They can't tell us exactly when it's going to happen. They're not allowed to. That's, the Council of Worlds is directing them and is not permitting them to tell us certain things. But we have this much of a heads up. So, people do need to start preparing now if they decide that they want to survive. I, for one... I've lived a pretty good life so far, and I think I'm ready to go on to the next dimension. I'm really looking forward to living in a higher dimension.
Indeed, so am I. Now, Anne, this has been going along so quickly and very, very interesting. We are getting into the last few minutes of the program, so I want to give you the opportunity to give our listeners your website addresses and, of course, tell them where they can obtain your book. And you might repeat the title. Yes.
The title of the book is Dragon in the Sky, Prophecy from the Stars. And you can order it through my website, which is anneeller.com. Or it can be purchased on, I can't think of the name of it, Amazon, amazon.com, okay. And also Borders and Barnes & Noble. It can be ordered through them also. And we'll be speaking at the Bay Area UFO Expo in 2 weeks. And I'll have the book there for sale also if anybody's in that area. It's in San Jose. And I would just like to leave with kind of an up note that the Earth is going to survive all of this, and it is going to be cleansed, and it's going to be in a higher dimension when it's all over. And we are going to be going to a higher dimension also with new and wonderful experiences to look forward to.
I think that's a very wonderful note to finish the program on, really, because, as I mentioned earlier, just you take some of these predictions or prophecies in isolation, they sound very frightening.
Yes, and I just want to say to you, Mike, just keep up the good work. Your messages are doing an awful lot of good for a lot of people.
That's very kind of you indeed. Thank you very much. Well, I must thank you again, Anne, for coming onto the program. It's terrific. Maybe you've got so much more to tell. Perhaps I should have you on again in the near future. But anyway, thank you very much. It's
You're
been
welcome.
Extremely
thank
interesting.
You.
Right, friends. Thank you. We have no lack of interesting people that come onto the program. Next week I have Ian Dirina, who has just written a book which contains a journal of his paranormal experiences, mostly in the form of dreams, which have been happening to him for over 40 years. And in them, he often foresaw future events. The book is called My Dreams Come True. So, again, I think we'll have a very interesting interview. So thank you for being with me today. I hope you can make it next week. God bless you all. Thank you.